that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Generally, I do like a intro and outro and post-production, and it just is more work for me, so I'm not going to do that anymore. So rolling into this show, welcome back to the show. This is David Scales from what we're now calling the Surf Splendor Network, and we have a bunch of different shows on that network. This is The Grit with Chas Smith from Beach Grit for September 21st, 2017. Everything that we discuss in this show is available both on BeachGrit.com and on SurfSplendorPodcast.com. Of course, rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps other people to find it. And then, of course, on social media, it's a fantastic way to join the conversation. Mine is at SurfSplendor. Chaz, where are you at?
I'm at Reports From Hell on Instagram.
Sweet. You know, it's smart. The name, I thought about that name, Reports From Hell, after we talked last time, and I was like, it's smart because it's opened you up to now accommodating people from outside of the surf world. And because you're just posting videos of people eating crap all the time, it's like Reports From Hell actually tells you kind of what it is about.
It's funny. The original title, I had it as the title of a book that I was going to do. It was actually going to be the war journalism book, My Return to War Journalism, which is, I'm going to bring it back. But I think the title... Yeah, it was just Reports From Hell, but it came from like, what was it? It was like a general or something like that during the Spanish-American War. It was something bad about journalists that, I can't even remember. Like, even if we all went to hell, I'm sure I would, or even if something, the world ended, I'm sure I would have Reports From Hell on my desk by lunch or something like that.
Got it.
Real funny.
It is funny. And I figured that handle came from your war reporting journalism, but it also works now for just posting photos of people running into a rock when they're trying to swing off a tree into a lake or something.
It's
like
Reports
that
From Hell.
It's so perfect. Well, dude, good to see you.
Good to see
it's
you.
Been less than 2 weeks.
I mean, we're really smacking it out.
That's
the problem is now my brain is starting to think podcast. So then when enough stuff backs up in there that I think, okay, we got to talk about this, then I think, okay, we got to talk.
It's because you're on a daily publishing schedule with Beach Grit.
Yeah.
So you're on that mentality, whereas I'm compiling stuff on a 2 week basis. But I had an episode, an interview with John Pizel that I was going to post this week. But then the Kelly Slater Wave Ranch thing happened, and it's kind of like it's news. You got to jump on news when it happens. And we rarely have as a historic day as we had with that. So John Pizel is getting pushed till next week.
Amazing. Pizel is a great guy.
He is. But he'll be here next week too.
Perfect. But Kelly, are you saying Kelly's Wave Ranch will not be here next week?
I don't know. It might be actually. That maybe it won't. You know, to be honest, if somebody posts another clip of it today, I probably won't watch it.
To me, for honest to goodness, I wish to God the thing, somebody would blow it up. I wish that Kim Jong-un would send a nuclear missile and hit Kelly's Wave Ranch and hit all the plans and hit every part of it. and destroy it so badly that no one can ever do it again.
Is this jealousy talking?
No, this is the death of surfing. I firmly believe, like, I was depressed all day. I didn't do anything on Beach Grit all day yesterday. I was just in a hole of depression thinking this is officially the end. We're done. We wrapped it.
Do you want to get fully into it right now?
Yeah, I mean,
let's do it. Okay, I guess we are already into it.
Yeah, we're into
Explain,
it.
Explain, why is it the end of surfing?
To me, what Kelly successfully did, and I think Matt Warshaw said it well on Beach Grit. Matt said brilliantly, I think, that we traded magic for perfection.
Yep.
And I think that's a total apt summary. I think what Kelly did, and of course, this is nothing against Kelly or nothing against the WSL. I think in Matt's piece, he also said this is inevitable, right? Like,
sure.
Eventually, technology and history moves in a way that, of course, always at some point there was going to be a perfect fake wave.
Yeah.
But to me, what it did and watching, like, as I watched that day unfold, right? Like, it unfolded from first the rumors that it was going to happen.
Right.
I went up and, you know, when I had first heard about it, I guess I heard about it before the Hurley Pro, but I saw Dave Prodan, the WSL media guy at the Hurley Pro when I was there, and, you know, was peppering him, like, come on, get me in. Like, nobody's going to be able to write this thing better than me in terms of just color. And I really pushed him, and, you know, he is a kind man, but said no. So then Derek and I talked briefly about, okay, let's get a cherry picker, right? I had heard you couldn't fly drones. Somebody told me you couldn't fly drones because of the airport there. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go get a cherry picker, go up there and do it. And then I just thought, I just can't, right? Like, I have a bunch of other stuff going on, and I couldn't dedicate a full day to doing that. Stab went up there and did it, you know, good on them, like, and that was fun and everything. But as I watched the day unfold, kind of as it started with rumors to kind of blurry Instagram stories to Stab's, you know, fun kind of, you know, two giddy boys trying to get into this thing that they're locked out of, to then the WSL's, you know, fairly ghastly live blog, like their uninspired live blog, to then just the nonstop Instagram clips. And then, you know, by that night I was getting, you know, I had a very rich friend who, you know, got invited and went and was sending me videos of Eddie Vedder, you know, singing songs to Kelly Slater at the end. And I was just, at the end, I was sick. I was like, this is a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
And I think what they did essentially was, it was a successful amputation of the act of surfing from surfing itself. So now we can have the act of surfing live outside of, you know, what surfing actually is.
Yeah.
Which, and to me, that's it. That's over.
Well, okay. There's a lot to dissect there. A lot of different topics. I want to go back and just reset for anybody who's listening to the show who didn't experience all of that, or maybe just doesn't have an Instagram account, because that's really where it all existed for us. They held kind of a test event is what they were calling it at Kelly Slater's Wave Pool. And when I say they, the WSL, it was on Tuesday, September 19th. They had a women's division and a men's division. Gabriel Medina won the men's division. Carissa Moore won the women's division. Kelly actually surfed for the first time in 9 weeks since his foot injury. The way that the event was structured was that every surfer gets two rights and two lefts. And then each wave is scored on the 1 to 10 scale that we're familiar with. But the surfer only gets to keep one score from the right and one score from the left. And that goes into your heat total. And I don't know how many surfers were there totally.
I can't remember either, no.
Yeah. But it wasn't all of the World Tour or anything like that.
It was
that.
Like 14 or something, it felt like. Maybe.
Yeah, 14 between the men and the women total. Yeah, that sounds like about right. And ultimately, the WSL did not stream it. It's a test event, but they did invite about 150 people. It was the surfers themselves and their entourages, family, sponsors of the WSL events. Because it is a test event, and this is going to be something that they're going to be able to sell in the future.
There's a lot of investors there, too.
Investors.
Like people who have the potential for investment.
Well, you mentioned, I have a super rich friend that went. Why does that matter, or why did he get the invite?
Because, I mean, he's you know, involved in the super rich world. And so I think this is the WSL, you know, obviously bringing in people with money, showing them what the future looks like. You know, I think they probably think, now we actually have a business model, right? Like, throwing surfers to sit at trestles for 30 minutes and then do a heat restart because there's no waves, you know, I think is a difficult business proposition. But now I think, you know, hey, bring a wave park, like, for municipalities, you stick one in, you know, Long Beach, and you can throw a contest there, you can have events, blah, 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 blah.
Well, the WSL decided not to stream the event. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do a great job of keeping the test event secret in advance. And then once it happened, the day of, everybody who was within the walls of that compound was able to actually stream it on their social stream. Sure. And so at first, I didn't know what the policy was, and I still, to be honest, I don't know what WSL's policy was, because WSL was posting clips, but they weren't doing anything live.
No.
They had, like you said, a kind of poorly executed live blog, which I don't even know what that is. And is that a new term, you know?
No, I mean, it felt to me like that was just a reaction to Stab. I mean, the Stab was up there, and so they felt, okay, well, you know, we better, because it seemed really half-assed.
It was, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it seems silly that, I get it, like, in my talking with ProDan and then my own thoughts of it, I said, sure, yeah, you're running a test event. You don't want, in case something goes wrong, in case it's, you know, in case it's just not very exciting, like, you want to be able to do it quietly and then tweak it. But it clearly wasn't quiet at all, right?
No.
It was all day, every day.
It was frenzied.
Yeah, it was a frenzied clip attack.
So I'm on my phone at work looking at social media, and it's like somebody posts a clip that was, you know, posting it to Instagram, maybe it was 3 minutes old, let's say. By the time it goes up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're running this event today. Then this fire starts growing and spreading. And then Silvana Lima was the first one I saw doing a live stream, and that was the greatest thing ever.
Yep.
She was panning over to the big screen, whatever, Jumbotron, and then back to the live action, then walking around the back, the behind the scenes stuff. So you see Felipe Toledo playing ping pong with Gabriel Medina, and it was radical.
Sure.
It was like being on site. So I loved that. But then I was getting messages from listeners, direct messages, and they're like, she's gone rogue. You know, yeah. Is she rebelling? Are they going to then reprimand her? But no, apparently WSL was totally okay with it. So apparently it was a strategy of the WSL to not personally stream anything, but allow everybody there to put it out there.
I don't think it was a strategy. I think it was a total accident.
Really?
That played well. I think they probably didn't really think of it. I think they didn't think, hey, you know, no cell phones. I mean, how do you even, it'd be really hard to police anyway.
But on a much smaller scale, they have in the past. Like when they did the test run and Todd Glazer shot all the photos and it ended up on the cover of the magazine, they probably did collect everybody's phone that day.
It could have, yeah.
You know? I guess so.
I mean, and if it was a strategy, it was a brilliant strategy, I think, in terms of you know, drumming interest. Because I think it was, you know, it was probably the, I mean, I don't know how you can, at least in the surf world, that was the only story of the day, right? Mm. I mean, it was the WSLs.
Completely.
And I was at dinner, I think it was, must have been that night, with a group of non-surfers. And non-surfers are, you know, somebody who was tangentially involved in surfing, pulled out a cell phone and showed a total non-surfer. Like, that was the interesting story for him,
right,
too. They made a perfect wave, right? And the non-surfer could not believe that wasn't in the ocean. And then, you know, like, wow, like,
yeah,
you know, the beauty of man, I guess.
So, as a marketing strategy, whether it was an afterthought or strategic in advance, you do think it was a good move to not let media into the event?
Oh, no. I think it was awful, right?
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I think it worked. Sure. It totally worked. It did exactly what, you know, I'm sure they couldn't have scripted it any better in terms of what went out and all that. Yeah, I can't script this. But I think it was the first time, like, the only other time I've ever been at a surf thing where there was a semi-closed door is at Bell's, right? Bell's, you have to pay $20 or whatever to go down the stairs to watch it. But you can also walk around. I mean, there's 100 ways in there, mm-hmm. You know. I never really thought about that before. But they, for the first time ever, you know, surfing has always just been on the beach where anybody can go watch it. The exclusivity part of that, the you're in, you're out thing of that thing, it didn't make me mad personally. Like, I'm all about exclusivity, but it doesn't seem like exclusivity should be part of surfing. I'm sounding like I'm talking about surfing like a religion here,
mm-hmm.
but it is, right? Like, I think in some way, I mean, to me, like, you know, Finnegan's book is titled it's Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life. And the way he writes about, you know, kind of as he slowly meanders through his life, and he was obviously a massively successful journalist as a, you know, I mean, he's covered wars, I think, and poverty,
yeah,
and, you know, international correspondent for The New Yorker. when it came time for him to write his memoir, he wrote A Surfing Life. Just a, you know, the way that surfing infuses our DNA as surfers, I think is just part of this both dream and access to it. Like, anybody can go to the beach, right? And still, Kelly's pool doesn't stop that. But to put a wall around it and close it off, to me, was, again, that was one of the many small deaths that happened that day.
You know, it's interesting. I hear what you're saying, and I hear what Warshaw was saying with that quote, we traded magic for perfection, and it's heartbreaking. But I completely disagree. Like, what they did there has nothing to do with my personal surf experience. And it's not that we have one or the other. It's that we can have both things simultaneously. That will exist, and it doesn't affect me at all. And I'm actually never going to surf that wave. Even if I really want to, I very likely will never end up surfing that wave, no matter how much desire I have. So I don't really, like, the whole frenzy of it all was entertaining, but I didn't feel that it jeopardized me and my surfing.
I don't think it jeopardizes you or your surfing. I think it drastically alters your grandchildren's surfing, to be honest. I think that's the day that surfing changed from dream to this thing, right? Because to me, that wasn't surfing that was happening that day. That was wake surfing, you know, like wake surfing where people load down their boats and, you know, hop on skimboards basically and follow and just surf in the wake of the boat. That's what that is. That's wake surfing. But I think Kelly's wave is wake surfing. It's just done really well. But to the man on the street, that's indecipherable from real surfing. And also, this is the WSL model moving forward. So this being professional surfing, I just think that what the adventure and the unknown and all these parts, they'll certainly still exist for our grandkids. I'm assuming the world is still around.
Yeah.
But I think not in the same way. I think the amputation of the act from the dream is severe and profound and won't, you know, again, for us, won't matter. But for our children's children, I think surfing died. What surfing has been from the beauty of surfing from ancient Hawaiians, ancient Peruvians before them, just kidding, Hawaiians, up until September 21st. Was it 21st?
19th, I don't know.
September 19th. No. That's the day. 19th, I mean, that is, it's surfing's tombstone is, you know, 5,000 BC to, you know, 2000, whatever we're in, 2017.
I think it's definitely a cornerstone for sure. I'm not nearly as much of an alarmist or even a doomsday, you know, scenario. To me, you're absolutely right. It will definitely alter the way my grandkids view surfing. But I can't assess whether it's negative or positive, you know? And I'm guessing that it's actually not negative. Like, I think that this will, like you said, maybe it becomes more akin to wake surfing or something like that, which, again, when wake surfing came out, I didn't view that as a threat of my surf experience, and it doesn't really. So maybe both things grow in succession and become their own things, and they're equally big, but I don't know that it really jeopardizes anything that we have going in the ocean, you know?
I hope you're right. I hope you're right, David Scales.
I read... obviously, Travis Ferry's thing on What Youth, and I know that you reposted it on Beach Grit, saying it was the greatest thing that you read about that day. Do you want to recap what he said?
I mean, he basically said, you know, I didn't read anything great about that day. I think Stab had great access, but I don't think, or, you know, their story was great.
It was fun.
But what's, you know, Mikey and what's his name, Morgan, what they wrote wasn't good writing, you know? I mean, they were just kind of, they were like caught up in the giddiness. And so I guess that was fun to read their giddiness, but it wasn't good. Nothing else I read that day was good, except for Travis was the only thing that I read that day that was thoughtful. Thinking like, okay, they basically turned surfing into golf.
Yeah.
This is a golf course. It's exclusive. There's a bunch of suits in there. And it felt, you know, one of Travis's lines was it's slimy and elitist.
Yeah.
Which surfing has never felt slimy and elitist, right? I mean, again, I think one of the many, many small deaths that day to make surfing elitist in a way that, you know, where my super rich friend who, you know, I hope he's not listening, he's a great guy, but also a full kook. Like, he doesn't, you know, appreciate or, you know, I mean, and by full kook, I mean, he's not a bad person at all. He's not a surfer, right? Yeah. And that's who was in there getting feted because, you know, they're the ones with money and, you know, obviously. And again, I understand that I'm not an egalitarian in that or generally, I guess I'm not an egalitarian in my normal life. I love, you know, that's just the way the world works. The world is stratified, but maybe also being at the Hurley Pro changed my opinion, where I really set out, you know, purposefully to report, to be with the people. And it was kind of a funny, you know, beat, I guess, but I was really serious about it. Like the first day I went to the Hurley Pro and saw where the media tent was, you know, just so shitty. And, you know, like I love the Hurley Pro. It's a great event. But just thinking, fuck that. And it just made me question everything kind of that I had done in surfing up to that point, in terms of, you know, I've always been to that point looking for the VIP tent and, you know, drinking the free beers and hobnobbing with the, you know, the surfer coaches. And that day I just thought, fuck it. This is like, I do not want to do that. I specifically don't, because that's not what surfing is. And that's one of the real beauties of surfing. So maybe even just my own small personal revelation at the Hurley Pro, and then extrapolating that to the exclusivity, the ultra exclusivity. You know, they took the VIP because that was the great thing, right? So at the Hurley Pro, I'm standing and watching all these, you know, the unwashed masses, like poor Brazilians. I mean, did you go down there at all?
Not at all. For the same reason that you're talking about. So, I mean, kind of like I don't really care anymore.
Yeah. But like, okay, so down on the rocks, right? Like, I have to, it feels like a good 50% of the people who are actually there on the beach watching it are Brazilian.
Really?
And yeah, it felt like it. And, you know, obviously that's my, you know, maybe just by where I was standing.
Sure.
But, you know, and it was poor Brazilians, right? Like dirty footed Brazilians sitting there. And, you know, like, the people down on the cobblestones aren't rich, you know, families playing with kids, all enjoying this and standing right behind them, you know, sure in a tent, but you know, it's open. You can look right in, is the entire surfing hoi polloi, right? There's John Florence, there's Gabriel Medina, there's Felipe Toledo. There's everybody who matters in surfing. They're walking through, coming back, you know, like the interaction between, like common and royal in surfing is only ever been separated by a flimsy piece of canvas, right?
Yeah.
That gets passed through on both sides quite often. On the day of the test, all of a sudden that was replaced with Donald Trump's wall, right?
Yeah.
Where, and to me, that's a severe difference from what we've had in surfing. And one thing that's made surfing fantastic.
I agree. I'll get back to the wall, but I want to reiterate that it has made surfing fantastic. I've told friends who don't surf that, like, I'll be randomly surfing Newport Beach. This happened a decade ago, and Tom Curran paddles out, and you're surfing with Tom Curran. So talking to people who don't surf, try to equate that to playing basketball, and you're just at the park, and then LeBron shows up and starts shooting hoops with you.
I mean,
it's radical.
And even, you know, during the Hurley Pro, right, there at Lowers, all the kids are surfing middles. So just think if there was like two courts set up, like, you know, you have your main court for basketball, and then without even stands in between, nothing in between, you have side courts and kids can be playing basketball at the same time, you know, glancing over and watching the Cavaliers play whoever.
Completely.
Which is,
it's rad.
And now with the wave pool. And again, I get that. I understand what you're saying, that it's a different thing that will not necessarily infect surfing, that there'll be wave pool surfing and there'll be surfing. But I can't help but think the lessons learned in the pool will transfer back to the beach, and that, you know, it's just going, again, I think surfing, I'll give you that, you know, of course, nobody knows what the exact change is going to be, but I still feel the surfing of our, you know, surfing from 5,000 BC till 2 days ago is dead. Something is different now.
Yeah. So let's get back to the wall. I think, and Travis's article about it being kind of a country club mentality and elitist, and let's examine whether or not it becomes a division of classes. I'm totally okay if it becomes elitist and if it becomes a division of classes. I feel like I'm a capitalist and a pretty poor one at that, actually, as somebody who's been working 30 hours a week giving this thing away for free for 4 years. I'm not very great at it. But I don't think that any of us are entitled to what they did. Like, the wave pool thing, if a couple of rich guys created this thing and want to only do it for their rich friends, by all means, go ahead. And I'm not entitled to it. None of us are. So, yes, I got left out of that day, and that's because I don't fit in with that group. Fair enough. So if I want to work super hard, become a rich guy, and then play with them, I can either do that, or I can continue going to the beach and using this free resource that we've all done since the beginning of time. and I'll go ahead and do that.
Sure, okay? but I will disagree. I mean, I am right next to you and behind you, being a capitalist and even a worse capitalist than you, doing Beach Grit for virtually free for 4 years. I totally understand that. I just think what they took, though, and again, I hate to sound like I'm waxing eloquent about surfing or elevating surfing to a religion, but I think, you know, back to Finnegan's subtitle, A Surfing Life, that's what it's been to all of us. It's part of our life, right? And unlike anything else, nobody's been able to put it in a box. Nobody's able to build a wall around it. You can't build a wall around, you know, bells. They try, and I think they've been charging there forever, right? That's part of the history. Mm-hmm.
But it goes into like the preservation.
Sure, totally. Yeah. Exactly. And so that's part of Bell's history, is charging for the event. It's not like we're keeping you out, so we're going to charge events. And it's not like that's the model that they try to, you know, redo at any other surf event. It's singular in that. But I think the fact that taking surfing away, putting surfing behind a wall, it was a grave, 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 grave disaster, I think. Awful.
I'm not giving them the credit for doing that.
Yeah.
I don't think they put surfing behind a wall. I think they created this manufactured version of it, and they're putting that behind a wall, and they're seeing how it plays. I'm looking at it going, it's not really surfing. You know, you didn't really take anything away from me.
Sure.
You guys did something different.
Totally. But I still think, back to my mixed metaphors, medical metaphors of amputation, and now I'm going to get into gene splicing. I think they did. This is, you know, this is, what was that sheep name that they...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Molly or Holly or something.
It's a good question.
So they genetically engineered surfing, right? Kelly's really anti-GMO. He's anti-GMO. The wave pool is genetically engineered surfing.
Yeah.
It's GMO surfing, and you don't know the consequences of introducing GMO crops into the wild, just like I think we don't know the consequences of that genetically modified surfing into the surfing wild, Kelly.
So you're blaming Kelly for all of...
I'm not at all. I think that Warshaw was correct that it was inevitable. But I guess I'm blaming Kelly. Kelly's the one who actually did it. And so I'm blaming Kelly. Kelly is Dr.
Dolly was the sheep's
name. Dolly was the sheep's
name. I don't remember the doctor's name. But
what was the Dr. Monroe's Island or something? It was Dr.
Yeah. Moreau.
Dr. Moreau.
Moreau.
Yeah. Kelly is Dr. Moreau.
So I want to get back to the WSL's decision to either stream it or not stream it. And more specifically, the decision to keep media out. That was something that we actually didn't discuss yet.
Sure.
Is they didn't invite media into the event. I think that it was actually a really good move, whether or not they intended to do it. I've argued for years that with specialty events, whether it's big wave events or whatever, like it's always better as a post-produced package.
Sure.
If you look at viewer numbers for big wave events, it's like nothing, you know? And then if they can put it together into a 30-minute or an hour thing after the fact, it gets tons of views, especially on somewhere like YouTube. So I think that if they were to have streamed this event live, it would have required a tremendous amount of like pre-production interstitial content, because you have to wait 5 minutes in between waves.
Sure. I don't think they should have streamed it, but I think they should have had a representative, if a representative wanted to go, from each of the major surf outlets inside, in the same way I think that Donald J. Trump would love to get rid of his press pool. There's a reason for press, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think the press should have been there to stream it, but I think they should have had somebody from Surfer, someone from, you know...
Why?
Stab. I think because the surf media, you know, like all of us crappy surf journalists who watch this stuff, you know, and live this stuff and eat this stuff and breathe this stuff, I think our perspective would be both A, unique, and B, helpful to making the product better. I think the WSL is, you know, attempting to be both ESPN and the NBA at the same time, right? They're both the media and the product itself and covering itself. I think they, you know, they're trying to get better about realizing that, you know, the surf media is kind of how people engage. I'm sure they would love to cut out surf media entirely at some point and just, you know, they have the riders, they have the product. It's all one package thing, but there's just value in different opinions. And there's also value in, you know, what I would have written about the day, you know, if it was a 300-word thing, I guarantee it would have been the best thing written about the day. But also it would be fun to compare that to what, say, you know, Morgan or, you know, whoever, Nick Carroll or whoever the other writers there, it would have been fun to see these different perspectives of this, of what turned out to be truly a historic day playing out.
I guess you guys did all write about the day and they got that out of it without letting you guys into 100%. The event.
They
were, you know, so what would the upside be to actually inviting you in?
Cause it would be, I think it would be, it would have been way better writing because we just wrote about it happening, but there was no real insight.
No, there wasn't.
And I think the other thing they would have gotten, it would have been better, right? I think if you have these people there who are honestly boots on the ground in this crazy pro surf world, you know, day in and day out, yeah. I think the perspectives that would have come out would have made, in the future, would have made for a better product.
Maybe. I think you say it would have been better writing, and I think that's true, but it only would have been better for each of those individual media outlets. I don't know that the better writing benefits them. I think what they did successfully, I think, was put the burden on these media companies, Beach Grit, Stab, Surfline, where they were all vying, you guys were all vying to outdo one another by simply pilfering and aggregating all the same information that us, the viewer, had already. And what I've seen is that viewers, consumers, want to pick their own journey, whether it's fast forwarding through your DVR commercials with the television that you watch, or just unfollowing certain Instagram accounts that you don't like anymore. The viewer wants to control it. And I think the WSL kind of put that burden on your guys' lap and was like, hey, you guys, we're not going to give you access and give you special privilege. Just go ahead and figure out what your story is, just like everybody else does. And you tell us, you prove your value to us so that we can invite you to the next event.
And if that's what their goal was, then for me, I'm not going to say I'm done, but I'm virtually done with the WSL at this point. I'm out. Like this, that day again, and not that they need me, obviously, and not that they need Beach Grit, but it has made me, and I will continue to rethink moving forward, you know, how I want to tell WSL stories and what I want to do with the WSL, because at this point, Noah Dean was right. I feel like fuck the WSL. Fuck them.
Because really, they're making you guys scrap at that point.
And I'm not about to scrap over there fucking, you know.
Well, it's further doing what we've talked about in previous shows, which is, who is your core audience?
Sure.
Either the core surfer, which there's not enough to really make this profitable for you guys.
Sure.
There are, obviously, it was reported by Ashton at Stab that they're operating at a $30 million a year loss currently.
100%.
So they need to transition and start selling it to middle America and people away from the coastline. And this is representing that. This is them going, we're building this pool so that we can accommodate people away from the coastline, and we're not even going to let the media companies who have kind of helped promote us up until now into the event. We're going to let the common man choose their journey and how they want to view it by following Silvana Lima or Kanoa's little brother or
sure.
whatever.
And great, you know, and again, I totally understand and appreciate the WSL's need to make money, and clearly, you know, a way forward for them is to both control the environment, which is, you know, guaranteed waves. Production will, you know, sink in cost, I'm sure, to compared to, you know, hauling cameras and building scaffoldings on the beach.
Yeah.
To, you know, pennies on the dollar, I'm sure, when you can just have these static,
totally.
You know, event spaces that you just turn it on and all of a sudden there's waves and there's surfers and they're scoring and da 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 da. I appreciate completely the WSL's becoming profitable that way. I just don't want to be a part of it.
Well, so that's the thing. If they're alienating you and I, who are the core surfers, whose surf experience is in the ocean, who will never ride a wave pool, then they're really going to isolate themselves into becoming a non-surf entity.
Sure. Which is probably their goal, right? At some level.
We've seen, it probably is. And if they want to be profitable, but we've seen that happen with clothing companies. Like we've talked about, when was the last time you bought a Quiksilver t-shirt
sure.
or whatever, you know? So is Quiksilver even a surf brand anymore?
Yeah.
It would be argued that they're not by that logic. So it will allow for new space to open up for companies like whatever, Brixton, to come in and become a surf brand. It'll allow for new contest tours to open up and become the new thing that core surfers do.
And if I was them, you know, I mean, maybe, yeah, I guess so. I guess I hadn't thought of it in that way, of something replacing
Rogue Tour,
like an ocean version of what the WSL is going to become. Yeah. And that might be fun again, right? At that point, then competitive surfing might be fun again. The way the WSL is going though, you know, again, I need more time. It's still too close. It's all still too fresh. The wounds, but and not the wounds of being left out, but just because I don't care about that. Like I chose to be left out, right? I know that I could have gone up to there too and figured out a way. You know, I've gotten into way harder places than Kelly Slater's surf ranch in my life. It wasn't about the being left out, and it, you know, again, that's probably why I didn't write anything at all yesterday on it, because I thought everything I write is going to be sour grapes. It's going to look like, you know, the media or I was cut out. And that's not, that's seriously not, or I mean, you know, I guess if people perceive that's what I'm saying, then, you know, they can perceive that all day long. But I don't feel any sour grapes about it. I just feel a profound sadness at what I feel is a real death of, again, what I loved about surfing my whole life. Surfing infecting every strand, you know, every little decision through my life, you know, even going to Yemen and Somalia and Lebanon and it all had a surfing component to it. Every part of my life is at a surfing component. That day I felt is the day that, you know, my life will still carry on and be, you know, revolve around surfing to some extent. But it really did feel like a death blow.
I hear you. Do you think that the WSL, like we're just kind of painting a scenario where they go completely inland and completely non-ocean focused, do you think that there's a version where they can do both things successfully? Where they, like, they hear your and I conversation right now and they go, wait, we don't want to eliminate those guys. Turns out, let's actually invite them to Hawaii to come to the Triple Ground and we'll give them first-class treatment and let them report on that stuff and tell the behind-the-scenes stories. But then we'll also do three events a year in the middle of America, Australia, and Europe to cater to that other thing.
I mean, I don't want first-class treatment from them. I don't want anything other than, you know, like, I want nothing from the WSL, quite frankly. I think, sure, I applaud them, I guess, for going and doing inland, you know, wave pool tours, like, figuring that model out and having, you know, the Detroit wave pool. I'm sure it'll, you know, if it works, let's say it all works really well, it'll revitalize communities and, you know, bring a whole fresh revenue stream. Like, the economics of it, I completely applaud, but again, for me, just that's not surfing. I don't want anything to do with it. You know, at this point, right today, I know it's not surfing.
Sure.
The part of me, you know, I just don't want anything to do with it. Like I don't, you know, I'm not angry at wakeboarding or wake surfing or any other form of surfing. It doesn't make me angry. This though, again, I just think the genetically modified of this part, this is the only thing that's actually surfing been actually surfing. I don't like it. And I don't like, I just don't like it.
I guess
I sound real old and cranky.
No, but I mean, I definitely felt and wrestled with some of those same things that you're talking about watching it. I guess the question that I would have for you and even Travis over at What Youth is, if Kelly gave us an invite next week on Monday to go surf that pool, would you surf it?
No.
You wouldn't it?
No.
Just out of moral indignance?
Sure, out of spite at this point.
Really?
Yeah, but...
you think Travis would? He wrote the missive.
Yes, Travis would surf it.
He would surf it.
Sure. Let's see here. Would I surf it? Let's be real.
Be real, dude.
Okay, here. I would have said yes up until one clip that I saw on what the day I was running. Okay, you want to
trying to guess which clip it was.
I saw one clip and then I thought, I don't want to do that.
Okay.
So every clip I had seen before, right? They do a really good job of framing the shot where the wave looks like it's running down the line, right?
Yeah.
In your mind as a surfer, you have this wave, you know, the glory of surfing to me is dropping in, and looking down the line and just seeing that shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Like I love that so much. That's, you know, I love that almost more than even the feeling. I mean, I love the feeling of getting barreled. There's so many feelings with surfing that are great, but that's one of them. Is dropping down for me and just seeing that shoulder open up. I saw a clip, I think it was Matt Violas who posted it, of Carissa Moore, and it was a follow shot, the first follow shot I'd seen, because they had jet skis out there following the surfers too.
Raymana.
Not 10 feet in front of Carissa is that giant plow. And so you're surfing, honest to goodness, the entire wave you're surfing. I mean, it's probably a little more than 10 feet, but it's
not much.
It's right there.
Next to the wall.
You're surfing facing a wall, which to me, that was felt almost poetically, described how I felt inside. It's just like the dream is done. You're staring at this machine. And they could, for Kelly's pool, it was blue, right? They had it looked like they had a blue tarp or something over it. It was like this big blue thing. And theoretically, I guess you could paint, art on that or have a
diamond head in the background.
Exactly. Have an LED screen that's but I don't surf to stare at a wall.
Yeah.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
It's funny. You're right. If you watch them take off, they're taking off right next to the wall. Sure. And you're looking at it going, well, they're going to have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And then they just stay. So to explain it to listeners, it's a long pool.
Yep.
Just like a big, long lap pool, basically. And a wall on one side of it. Let's say the pool runs north to south. So the wave does move from north to south, but it doesn't move east to west at all. And that there's like a big, they call it Thomas the Wave Engine is what Kelly's calling it, which is on the wall itself, this big mechanized kind of.
It's a plow, I think.
The plow is underwater, you know? So like it's basically a train that just runs from north to south, dragging the plow underwater, which creates the wave. And what I thought was that there was a separate wave pool on the opposite side that was where they were doing the left, but it appears that it's not.
It just runs back.
Yeah, it just runs back. So like once it goes north to south for the right, then they let all the water settle and then run it from south to north so that you surf the left again towards the wall. So you're always facing the wall, whether you're going right or left. So that's just a little bit about the mechanics. I like your metaphor, though. You're staring at the wall.
The entire time.
That's the metaphor for, like, this is the wall that we've come to in surfing where it's good.
And that's, like, taking that away from surfing, which is, again, that's what I feel they did. They amputated genetically modified, right? They took the one feeling out of it, gliding on a wave. Which is one part of what makes surfing beautiful, and they took that and they took the feeling of getting barreled, but everything else is basically gone, right? You're sitting in, stagnant green water. You're smelling the cow shit.
It's brown.
Yeah. Stagnant brown water. You're smelling the cow shit from the cow farms. There's no more seagulls and salt water and, I know that I'm waxing way too, eloquent or getting way too esoteric about surfing, but I guess surfing has always been, like, until I saw That Day of Kelly, I guess I didn't even ever consider not having surfing anymore, right? And that's the first time that I considered it. So I'm staring at a wall on this, in this machine. That's the, and not for me, again, it's not, but for my children's children's children, you know, global warming withstand, notwithstanding.
Old man Smith.
Wow, just being cranky.
Waxing on.
Just being
so
cranky.
No, I mean, while I hear you completely, I can't help but feel like this is how my parents and maybe my grandparents talked about the internet, you know?
Sure.
And like,
no,
CDs, like, and I remember specifically with text messaging 15 years ago going, dude, don't text me. Like, it's so impersonal. Yeah. Just call me, for God's sakes. And now, please don't ever call me. Shoot me a text message. You know what I mean? And then that parlayed into the internet and into Uber and into all these things. So for us to try to assess where this all goes, I think is really kind of futile and also just short-sighted, because maybe Kelly's going, look, you guys, this is a test and there will be seagulls in the future and there will be all these things that you're talking about, but we got to just – we got to sort it out now. This is the test, you know?
I get it. I mean, again, I get it. It's just, and I know that I've planted my flag on Luddite Mountain, like, firmly and deeply right now. And I guess those things, communication, like you said, you know, texting versus calling, music, the way I watch film, the way I eat my food, all these things, none of these things has been as integral to my life as surfing is. So I guess this one just cut really, for me, cut really deep. And, you know, I could come out a month later and say, well, what was my problem? I was such a crank. You know, this is awesome. You know, in a month or in 2 months. But I don't see that happening.
Or let's be honest, all of those things can be used for evil. You know what I mean? And so it's yet to be defined. Like, it could become something amazing, or it could become the country club model that we're fearing, and then it's only reserved for the select few and nobody really, or whatever. I don't even know. Maybe I'm not even against that, like I said earlier. I don't know. It's super interesting. I think the way that they managed the media and the letting everybody stream it and all that sort of thing provided for me a level of excitement that I haven't had for a long time. I was bouncing from account to account to try to see what was happening in real time.
Sure.
And that was actually more exciting to me than watching the Lowers event live the previous week, where I could just steady stream it all day long, tune out when there's nothing, put it on mute when I could see that there was nothing happening. This provided a certain energy around it that hadn't happened in surfing.
Which I totally agree. Like, like, and I get the almost crowdsourcing your coverage or something is great. But again, I think there's value, and, you know, shoot me in the head, please. But I just think there's value in professional journalism. And please, again, I'll ask you to shoot me in the head. But I just think there is. And I think the WSL, you know, to call surf journalism, I guess, proper journalism is a giant stretch, but that's what we have, right? And there's, okay, and don't invite me, but invite somebody, like, invite somebody to write it.
Maybe the WSL had that conversation, and that's where I said they put the burden on you guys, the media, to do some real reporting, because maybe they sat in the room and go, surf journalism isn't a thing. There's nobody out there actually doing journalism. So F them. If they haven't done a good enough job at this point of doing their job, then we're not going to give them this handout and let them come. Let's keep them out and make them work for it.
You know, and if that was what it was, then Stab totally carried the day, right? And
maybe, obviously,
and Stab at the end, Morgan and Mike were allowed in, right? They got to see.
I didn't know that.
I mean, at the very end, I think they got to go watch Eddie Vedder or something like that. You know, they were rewarded for their, you know, pounding at the gate, pounding on the wall, which, you know, God bless them. And, you know, that was great. But for me, again, watching the way they were covering it, it was super fun. And it was great. I think it added, the way Stab covered it, it added to the excitement of the day too, right? Like, the seeing those guys be so giddy about, you know, trying to figure out each piece at a time was fun for me to watch. But also, I want more than just giddiness, right? I would have loved to have a Nick Carroll or a Steve Shearer or somebody really a good writer inside kind of describing. I would have, you know, again, since my flag is in Luddite Mountain, I would have loved to almost have read a running comment, you know, even tweets from a really good surf writer. You know, I would have I would have loved that almost more than the, you know, the giddiness of Stab was part of it. Cute giddiness. But I would have loved for more.
So my thought with why they didn't, WSL didn't run a live stream like they do for their other events is, number one, we have always shamed them when they don't do a perfect job at something. Sure. And when they don't have all that interstitial pre-packaged stuff and we have to sit staring at a flat ocean for 20 minutes in between waves, we criticize them. So I think they recognize, like, look, we're going to get criticized unless we do a fantastic job. And there's too much downtime and too much variable in this test. And they were right. The wave broke.
Yeah.
The plow broke at some point in the day. They ended up fixing it. So they ran into things like that. And let's also be honest, not every wave was the same.
Yeah.
If their goal here is to make a perfect wave that's always the same, it wasn't. Every wave that I saw surfed had variation to it.
Sure.
And there were some little barrel sections that like ran off without the surfer. So they're still working a lot. And that actually makes it for better viewing.
Totally. But I totally get why they didn't live stream it themselves.
Yeah.
Right? Like, my own personal beef only with that was I wish there would have been... I liked the on the boots, you know,
yeah.
I mean the Instagram from the surfers themselves, this sort of crowdsourced journalism.
Yes.
I would have liked, though, personally, one little small layer above that of just somebody writing well about it.
So I thought about that. Yeah. I thought about the solution,
yeah.
And what the solution could have been was WSL could have run a live Instagram stream,
sure,
throughout the whole event. And we know Joe Terpel was there commentating the event. He could have just been running the live stream himself,
sure,
commentating on waves. And it's not the cleanest footage, of course, and not close-ups, but nothing that we... I mean, that's okay, too.
But the fact
that you're getting it live and then they're going to have a post-production of the close-ups is great. And I saw Kanoa Igarashi's younger brother, Keanu, was streaming it in the afternoon for a little bit, and he enabled a function that I had never seen before, which was, I guess if one of your viewers, you can actually have like a FaceTime conversation with one of the viewers,
yeah,
by tapping on them.
Amazing.
So Kanoa or Keanu was watching the event, and then he goes, "Oh, Taylor in Australia, what's going on, dude? Good to see you on here." And he taps this button, Taylor's face pops up, and Kanoa's or Keanu's face pops up, and they're having a conversation about what's happening. So I thought, how rad would it be if Joe Terpel...
But why Joe Terpel?
Not that I'm choosing Joe, just
sure,
knowing he was there,
sure,
using him as an example. He wouldn't be my first choice.
Sure.
But because he's able to do the commentary is why I'm using him as the example. So if he's streaming the event, and then in between waves... Hey, Kelly Slater's logged onto our live stream right now. Click over to Kelly. Hey, Kelly, where are you at? Oh, I'm in the ping pong room right now watching this event. Hey, Kelly, give me some background on how long it took, whatever.
Sure.
And then somebody catches a wave. We watch that live. Then they go to Fred Hemmings was there that day.
Yeah.
And then
a lot of stalwarts.
MR was there that day.
Yeah, Sonny Garcia was there.
Yeah, Sonny. Yeah. So like that would have provided a full day worth of coverage.
Sure.
And I wouldn't have jumped from account to account. It wouldn't have cost the WSL any dollars.
It would have been an Instagram feed.
It's an Instagram feed,
yeah,
which is free. You
yeah
know, like there were, in hindsight, of course, there's solutions.
Of course.
But there were ways. I mean, Keanu Igarashi figured it out.
Sure.
You know, so I mean, the WSL could have figured it out in advance. So they could have done a better job of what they did.
Sure.
That's my point.
Sure.
So
Wave Ranch.
By the way, the Wave Ranch, I think they did a phenomenal job with branding.
Sure. Like, oh man, the like clothes and everything I saw, like the fact that the test was all like on people like calling it, you know,
the future classic.
Yeah, the future classic. All of it. The branding of it that I saw, the little I saw, was brilliant.
Yeah, the badges, the when you enter the ranch, it's like an iron
yeah
logo.
Yeah.
They're treating it like it's actually a cattle ranch.
Sure. Which is, I mean, it's cute. And I guess,
it is.
You know, for them, if this truly is the future of professional surfing, right, then, I mean, you could have different themed places here and there. And, you know, like the, whatever, you could have one in Hollywood that was... You know, who knows? Like
anything.
I mean, yeah,
yeah.
Which they could all be themed. But again, I'll go back to my death of surfing. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll watch it from far, far away. But yeah, I don't want to be involved.
One more question on the Wave Ranch before we move on. Was it, I think you and I actually criticized in our previous show the potential of it becoming boring if they don't add imperfections into
yep
the wave. You made a joke like, let's have a guy jump out with a stick and try to knock him off the wave,
yeah,
which isn't actually that bad of an idea.
Good idea.
But we were so oversaturated with those waves over the course of that day. And I mentioned earlier, now if somebody posts a clip of it this afternoon, I don't know that I'll sit through another 60-second Instagram clip of it.
Well, see, I mean, that's what I wonder, right? I didn't spend the day watching it. Like, I saw like a few brief things at the start, and that was pretty much, and then at the end, a few more brief things.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't soak it in, so I didn't see, you know, how they make variation in waves. And but, you know, I saw one clip of Gabriel Medina, doing a big air and landing it, and everybody hooping and hollering. But I mean, I thought, yeah, so like, can't Philippe go out and do the same thing? And obviously he didn't, because he didn't win. But
he did. He did a crazy alley-oop and landed, but he didn't win. He had a 9-8.
Yeah, but I mean, so all to say, though, I just don't know. Yeah, so everybody can go out and surf it really awesome. But
here's the question, though. Is it boring, or does it run the risk of becoming boring?
I mean, to me, it does. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, again, I didn't watch, and I'll
wait.
Did
you not watch because it was boring, though? Or did you just...
Yeah, but I felt like when I saw one thing, that was everything I was going to see, right? When I saw one professional surfer ride one wave well, I didn't need to see any more than that. Like,
right.
Where part of, you know, like it or dislike it, standing on the cobbled stone of the Hurley Pro,
yeah,
part of it is, okay, is a set going to come, right? Like,
right.
Like, and I know that that's super boring sometimes at home when the ocean goes flat and your heat restarts and blah, 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 blah. But... you know, that's part of surfing, and that's totally part of professional surfing that makes it fun, is, you know, that God is involved. And just taking that out, having those guys go on awesome waves, yeah, I think the performance level will be fun to watch for a minute. But I mean, they better change the judging at this point then, because the judging that they have now can't make, like, everything is going to be a 99.9,
right?
And the winner's going to get a 99.9, and the loser's going to get a 99.2 based on what? Like, yeah. His leg was not quite as bent, or I mean, they're going to have to get so fractional in how they judge it,
yeah,
that it's going to get. And that's the problem. I think, unlike like gymnasts, you know, in the Olympics, I think there's not only they do different routines, you know, same playing surface, obviously, but like in the different disciplines, you know, I think the difference between those guys, their skill is fractional too, but somehow those fractions are magnified when you watch it. Whereas for professional surfing, I don't think the fractions are magnified. I think they're, you know, it's amount of rotation and if you land it or not, basically. I mean, that's what it's coming down to. You can't get in a barrel any better. You can't start judging somebody's. I mean, that's one thing I know they have. Don't they have, is style part of the judging criteria?
No. Speed, power, and flow, which you could kind of translate to style,
but
style,
really,
the word isn't.
Oh, and that's the thing. And what is, you know, surfing style, like, what is better barrel style, right? I mean, so you could judge depth, somebody deep in a barrel, but if they're the exact same deep, then surfing is left judging those the same, because we can't judge one better than the other. Where, so it's those fractions that come off that I think that's how you can have gymnastics work, same playing surface, people doing roughly the same thing, but they do it wildly different ways. Surfing, you do it the same way if it's level, in the same way. Like, you only get so deep in the barrel. Sure, maybe you're, you know, pig dogging a little more interesting, but what's a good pig dog to me might be a hideous pig dog to you, right? It's becomes so subjective at that point. What do you do?
I think what's one thing that they're going to have to address, the WSL is going to have to address, is I didn't care who won the event.
No.
In the end, when I found out Gabriel won, I was like, all right, that's fine, whatever, I don't care. And I'm not even inclined to see his waves that he won on because of what you're saying. It's like, oh, it's so fractional. I'm interested to see the different styles of how Felipe chose to ride his wave versus John.
But
the score doesn't even matter to me at that point.
Well, and the style, once they choose how to ride the wave, all I need to do is see it once. Or, you know, like, there's going to be some fun, I think, in as the surfers adjust to riding this wave. Okay, how do they choose to approach it? Once you know how they choose to approach it, it's over. The fun is over.
Totally.
Like, that's it. That's how John's going to surf a wave, pool wave, and I've seen it once, and I never need to see it again.
I'm just now kind of making this connection in my head, and you can maybe tell me whether or not this was just me or if you felt this way too, but I truly don't care who won the event. Whereas, like, the lowers event, it's almost all I care about. And I do want to see the waves as well, but it matters who won that event because it means something. For some reason with this, it was like an afterthought. It was almost like... it almost kind of diminished the day that there was a winner. Like, the day was the highlight for me.
Completely.
In a really bizarre way. I don't know why that is.
It feels, I mean, I'm not a huge skateboard fan, but I have to go, or I don't have to, but I go to a number of Street League, you know, the professional skateboarding events. It almost feels like declaring a winner at those things, to me, exactly like you're saying now, diminishes the rest of it. Like,
it kind
of
does.
The winner almost seems silly at the end.
Yeah.
And everybody hoops and hollers and raises their trophies and all that. But it seems like really, to me, it seems really embarrassing, where a surf winner never seems embarrassing. But you're right. Like, Gabriel Bettino winning, I don't know that that's necessarily embarrassing. But I couldn't have cared less. It would have been impossible for me to have cared less.
I agree completely. Well, for the record, if I get the invite, I'm definitely going.
Yeah,
and I'm definitely surfing that wave.
Out of spite, I'm not, for the
record. See, I feel like you need to, out of due diligence, because then you can go and actually have the opinion.
Okay, sure. I will surf it once. I will go stare at that big blue wall once.
All right, we're waiting for our invites then. Kind of transitioning, we talked previously about the ambassador of Stoke and Leisure that the WSL... How crazy was it how actively they promoted that during the lowers event?
It was like a full, like the WSL has done, I feel, for the last few years, is it seems like they have accidental ideas that they'll embarrassingly put it up once, it'll get kind of made fun of, and then you'll never see it again. You know, that they may have done it or whatever, but that thing, that was the idea. Like, they were not backing down from it. But again, I told you that I had people in my Instagram feed saying, is this real? How can I do this?
Right.
And so then I had to back out and say, yeah, they're right.
But a listener actually at Instagram at Super Danger Powers, who's a listener of the show, messaged me and he's like, oh, dude, they're just collecting email addresses.
Oh, for
That's
sure.
That's all 100%, it is.
Of course.
That, like, the amount that they're going to pay that person to do that job
fractional.
Is for 6 weeks
sure.
is nothing compared to what they got out of the advertising 100%. Of the job itself.
I mean, that's why Amazon bought Whole Foods. Did you know that?
No.
They don't care about being in the grocery business. They care nothing about it. All they want is data. That's all they want. That's all Whole Foods is to Amazon, is data collection.
Hmm.
Like, that's the world we live in now, where data is, data is power, and data has crazy value. But yeah.
Fascinating.
Which is, good on the WSL, I guess, for... I feel that in the reign of, who knows how long this stuff has been... under consideration, but I feel that Sophie Goldschmidt, the new CEO, is, at least as a business person, a way phenomenally better CEO than Air Speaker.
Yeah, and that's what Derek asked Warshaw, that question. He's like, bringing a guy from the UFC and Sophie from all of her professional sporting backgrounds, WNBA and all that sort of stuff, like, that's just a good... I don't remember what the question was, but the answer was, like, it's just a smart business decision.
Sure, totally.
Obviously.
And, well, and again, with the wave... I think everything they're doing is good business decisions. Now, I suppose I'm stepping back and thinking, okay, is this a business I want to be associated with in any way, shape, or form?
Exactly. Yeah, and so that's a different question, of course. By the way, this is totally off topic, but I saw an article posted... by J.P. Curry.
J.P.
On Beach Grit.
Yeah. Did you see that?
I saw it.
Yeah.
It was about gambling in surfing, surf betting.
Sure.
Or actually fixed.
Yeah, being able to throw a heat. Yeah.
What happened with you and J.P., dude? You guys buddies or what?
I mean, I've always loved J.P. I think I said here on the show, like, that J.P.'s criticisms, I mean, all criticisms to me are water, off the back. Like, I rarely take things personally. And JP's, barbs were, both funny and sometimes kind of interesting. But yeah, like, I think JP can actually write well.
Sure.
And, I like JP's, I would love to have him more at Beach Grit. Like, I like his agree or disagree. I think you have an opinion about JP's stuff, or people have opinions about it, and that, I think there's value there.
Well, he's taken a lot of flack in the comments section for being kind of a dissenting opinion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in comment sections.
Section in previous articles,
sure.
Like, just in general.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to see his name pop up as the author of the article.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Did he just reach out to you?
I think Derek and I are, actively always looking for new voices to come in and, somebody to come in and really own that kind of third voice. And I feel we've been, auditioning for that since Rory left.
Yeah.
and haven't quite found, you know, I think we've had some good writers and some writers that have had some good moments, but we haven't found that singular kind of voice that, you know, is somebody that, that really, you know, just gets to have the, like that the Beach Grit audience can grow accustomed to, and that it's right. This fun third perspective, you know, which again, I don't think we've had since Roy left.
You've had a rotating cast of characters and they've had pros and cons, sure. Each of them. I do like JP, and I also liked that his perspective, isn't he from Scotland or something?
Yeah, he thinks he's from England somewhere, UK? British Isles somewhere, yeah.
Right.
Exactly nowhere.
And I like that perspective. Sure. So it was very different. We get so much Australia, so much yep. US, that it's like, it's no, cool to have that
completely.
Different opinion.
Having a kind of continental, and I don't know, again, you know, what JP's background is, but even coming at, you know, I'll laugh a lot about English surfing on Beach Grit, because to me it's a funny thing, like Cornwall,
yeah,
however you pronounce it.
I love Cornwall, by the way. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
See, yeah, and I should stop. I've gently poked fun, but yeah,
it's fun.
It's a fascinating part of our. They have their own surfing champions and stuff in England.
Like, yeah, I know.
They have British surf champions that you've never heard of.
Yeah, because they can't leave. Cut the mustard on the world tour.
Yeah, but it's amazing though that they let them. Maybe England needs a wave. Maybe England is a wave pool.
True. Potts has British.
He does.
I always forget. I know he's South African, but it's like, was he born in South Africa and then grew up in the UK? Or I think he was born in the UK and then grew up in South Africa.
Yeah.
Todd Prestige is another name I remember from my youth. Yeah, was he Todd from the UK?
Totally he was. Who's the guy who rides that... what's his name? What's the artist who did the surfboard? There's some British guy who...
Who did what?
Who's the artist? I'm totally drawing a blank. He does... you know, encases stuff and up to all.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll cut this little portion out. All right. Well, do you have anything that you want to discuss, or should I go into Barrel and Nah?
Yeah, let's go into Barrel.
Barrel or Nah. All right. We've got four topics today in Barrel or Nah. First one, Fantasy Surfer.
You know, I see how it can be fun. I've never been able to do, personally, it's Nah, but I won't give it a Nah universally,
okay,
because I see how people can have fun. It's just I've never been diligent enough to actually, you know, do the work to be good at any fantasy thing, right? I tried to play fantasy baseball for a couple of seasons, and you know, I've tried to do fantasy football before. I've tried to do fantasy surfer. I don't do good at fantasy, but I appreciate the idea of fantasy. So I have to. I am wave pool. I'm sorry, I can't be wave pool because I'm super passionate about the wave pool.
Part of that came from JP's article, which was about wagering on surfing, betting on surfing.
Yep.
The premise for his article was just that it's the most ripe thing to be fixed ever.
Completely.
Both from the surfer, the surfer can just fall on a wave
sure.
if he gets paid off, or the judges can easily get paid as well.
Just think how easy it would be to throw a big air and just like, oh, you could look like you're trying every time.
Completely.
Yeah.
Or just completely blow a heat and then just be like, oh, well, it's because my uncle just died. So I was at my headspace was off.
I mean, sure. But you can even the fact that you can blow heats while nobody like, you know, when a boxer throws a fight or whatever, you can usually tell I guess you can't usually tell, but it becomes easy in retrospect to tell. Surfing, you can never, ever, ever. Right. All a guy would have to do is boost airs
fall. Land them. Yeah. So JP talked about wagering on surfing. Do you know of any sites where you can do that, or should I reach out to JP?
You can't do it in America.
Okay.
I mean, so you could go through foreign, you know, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
But there's ways, you know, because they have wagering on surfing in both. It's huge in Australia, too. You can wager on surfing in Australia.
Do you know what the sites are, though?
It's Ladbrokes is one of the big ones in Australia.
Okay.
But I don't know, you know, I think you'd have to do, because I think it'd be illegal for them to offer it here. So you'd have to do some backdoor, or you'd have, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's easy. You can throw your IP address somewhere, right?
Sure.
And you can stick your IP in Australia. But yeah.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. That's how I did. I did it when I was in Australia. I surf bet one afternoon and I lost my shirt.
Really?
Yeah.
It's tough to do good at, dude.
You think it's so good and you think, oh, this heat, I got this. This is what I watch every day. I've totally got this heat. And you'll find yourself, I mean, I think if you can really bet head over heart, then you give yourself a way better chance to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well,
it's different.
I am honestly asking for a friend because a listener, direct messaged me and asked, like, hey, where can you wager on surfing? Because we do play Fantasy Surfer. I have a league, and I'm terrible at it as well. But he was like, dude, I want to bet. Like, where can I bet? And I'm like, I have no idea, and I don't even know who to ask.
I always think it would be a super fun if a Vegas casino actually went, you know, figured out how to make it legal here. Yeah. Surf. Because I don't know why it wouldn't be. Sports betting is legal. And so I would imagine it is legal in Vegas. You just have to find somebody to make odds on it. But, you know, if they had surf nights, how fun it would be to actually go to Vegas, you know, in this with a bunch of other surf fans. Betting live would be real. Watching the, you know, the big WSL event would be, I would do that and have so much fun doing that.
When was the last time you went to Vegas?
Oh, maybe a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't go to gamble. There's always, you know, whatever, you know, business thing or whatever takes me out there. But I used to loathe Vegas. Now I love it.
Do you really?
I'm a big Vegas fan.
Man, yeah. I'm still in the loathe phase.
Oh, yeah. Dude, just keep pushing through. Like, one day you'll go to Vegas and you'll think this place, you know, is like ridiculously wonderful.
Because it's like, I haven't actually been in years.
Yeah.
And I feel like I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I associate it with casinos and like seedy dudes passing out like strippers post business cards on the street and stuff like that. But certainly now there's the pool party scene. There's dance club scenes, obviously restaurants, shows, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so. I mean, and I've always put a huge premium on surreal, on things being surreal. Like, I love, one of my favorite times in my entire life, I'll make a quick story.
No, go long.
I was studying in Cairo, and a buddy and I took a train to Alexandria, which is, you know, on the Mediterranean in Egypt. And there must have been a party that day. I don't know what was happening, but it must have been like either a state thing or a Islamic thing or something. It was just, the streets were, got off in Alexandria, and I don't remember anything happening in Cairo. So maybe it was a specific Alexandria celebration.
Okay.
But the streets were packed with people. It felt like we got ushered kind of by people, like cheering people. You know, there weren't, I don't remember any tourists there that day or wherever we were, but, you know, like, huge city, right?
Yeah.
Millions of people, everyone on the streets, ushering us. I just remember getting pushed by people, like people cheering, people rubbing our heads and raising our arms and stuff. You know, we were the Americans there, push. Eventually we got pushed into an alley. It was all getting more and more crowded. Hmm. And it was getting smaller and smaller and smaller, which then eventually opened into like a kind of a courtyard, a big-ish courtyard packed with people. Push to the center of the courtyard. There was a ping pong table, and they gave us paddles, and we played ping pong while this mob of people just cheered us, like, which was, you know, it completely and utterly surreal. And, you know, like, those are the moments in life that I almost live for more than anything, when just reality dips and what is happening, where Vegas to me feels that way a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not even going to the clubs or pool parties or whatever is fun. Even walking around in Vegas, it's just this feeling like this place doesn't really exist, where you're in this bizarre dream of something.
I need to embrace that part of it then.
Embrace the surreal of Vegas.
Okay.
And you got to stay at a nice hotel too.
Yeah.
Like, you leave the surreal and go to your, you know, because Vegas has fantastic rooms these days.
Yeah. That experience that you're talking about, so they were just super into ping pong, and you guys were the novelty white people that showed up, and they're like, let's apply these two favorite things.
Yes. And I don't know that when we got off the train, that was what the people at the train were thinking. Somehow we just kept getting pushed, like drawn by fate
to
this ping pong table. And then once it came, you know, the people who actually pushed us toward the ping pong table, it was like,
that is amazing.
Yeah, here's these, you know, these two off things, and let's watch these American white people play ping pong in our weird neighborhood.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Who won?
I can't remember. I think the guy I was playing against once, his name was Ethan. I think Ethan won. Yeah, Ethan was real competitive.
Weird. Do you have any documentation? Did you take photos?
No,
anything? You know,
no.
That, yeah, I mean, that adds to the surrealness.
Yeah, it was like in 1990, would have been, you know, 92 or something.
It's better that things like that only exist in your dreams, too,
because
in memories.
No, I'm sure the video of it, you know, maybe it was like 30 people pushing us to the ping pong table or something. But, you know, my memory was just packed.
People. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, question number two, barrel or not, in relation to our conversation last week, peeing in your wetsuit.
Oh, total barrel.
Total barrel.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know. I mean, it's not only is it, what are you going to do? Get out and go pee? A. B, it warms you. Like, there's function, there's purpose. And it's also just part of being a surfer, I think, back to the Kelly Wave Pool thing.
Totally.
I want to piss in Kelly's pool, but that's also gross, right? Pissing in the ocean in any way and pissing in your wetsuit, it's just part of it. It's part of being a surfer.
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home. Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch. The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed. And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Since 1979, TireRack.com has been helping people find the right tires for how, what, and where they drive. They sell only the best, like the full line of Continental tires. Test results, ratings, and reviews are there to assist. Or try the Tire Decision Guide to get a personalized tire recommendation. Tires ship fast and free to you or to one of over 10,000 recommended installers. In many areas, they offer mobile tire installation. Shop Continental tires at TireRack.com.
I know, a listener actually sent me that one, and I was just like, dude, I'm embarrassed to even bring that up because that's so barrel.
If you have to ask, then really, you don't, you're like, I mean, I would question anybody who does not pee in their wetsuit. I would say they're not a real surfer.
Agreed. Yeah. There's somebody who's like friends with a surfer who told them that one time. And then they're like, do people really do this?
Yeah.
All right. Super barrel then. All right. Stretching prior to a surf, barrel or nah?
Nah.
Nah.
I'm a big fan of just being stiff and twisting up in the water. I think somebody told me probably completely erroneously at some point that stretching, you're not really supposed to stretch before you do something. You're supposed to stretch after. Like, you're supposed to warm up. You're not supposed to go in super cold. But stretching and then doing something, like stretching and then running, is bad. It just like throws your muscles off. You're just supposed to warm them up and then you stretch afterwards.
I think stretching after definitely has value, but I'm surprised that it doesn't have value before.
Yeah, I guess it just, your muscles aren't supposed to be stretched before you, from what I was told. They're not supposed to be stretched before you do something. You're supposed to be loose.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying go in tight, but.
Well, we're obviously experts on this, and this is now committed into the canon or of the barrel or nah. So, never stretch.
Never stretch before surf. Roll your neck around. Loosen up. But never never get on the sand. Never touch your toes. Like, people who really get into it, too, is obviously complete nah. Yeah. But even,
See, my mentality was always that I should do it, but I'd never, ever, ever take the time to do it.
And now you can feel good knowing that you shouldn't do it.
I've been doing it right all along by not doing it.
Medically.
Right. So, category number four, barrel or nah, Laird.
Oh.
Laird Hamilton.
Yeah, Laird Hamilton is a big nah.
And really?
Yeah, I think. I would have been like thinking that he was more barrel before I watched the fucking preview for his shitty documentary that's coming out.
They crammed that down our throats at the Hurley event too.
And the fucking shit. I loathe that kind of documentary anyway. I mean, I'm happy that this is coming out because it's exactly what I'm shooting against with the documentary that I am currently directing. But the loud, brash, Laird Hamilton changed everything, you know, and not just about Laird, but the sports doco where the subject of the doco changed the entire world.
Right.
I'm so tired of that. And it's totally not true. Laird is great. He's a good character. He's fun to have. He did interesting things. Yeah. He's lived an interesting life. Laird Hamilton has not changed one fucking thing.
Yeah. All right, dude. I'm going barrel for Laird.
Really?
I'm going super barrel for Laird.
Why?
I feel Laird in my mind is what Vegas is in your mind.
Okay.
I loathed Laird pretty much my entire life.
Sure.
Because he represented, he's so easy to make fun of.
Sure. You know, he's funny.
I don't know that I've ever seen him in a puka shell necklace, but he does.
He would be the puka shell.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's beyond. So, and with other things that we've discussed where it's kind of like if you just confidently own what it is that you're doing, then it becomes cool again. And I feel like Laird, his bleached hair is because he spends so much time in the sun.
Sure.
The reason he's wearing a tank top is because normal ring spun cotton can't hold in his shoulders.
Yeah,
you know, like he needs a tank top on.
Sure.
So he is what he is, and he's not really trying to be cool, and none of it is affect. It's all just, dude, the guy loves spending time in the ocean. And even though that he's invented, or not invented, but popularized the stand-up paddle and the foil board and things that have become kooky and will continue to become kooky, it's like, well, he was doing it for 10 or 15 years in the middle of the ocean with nobody watching because he loves the ocean that much.
I would have given Laird a complete barrel also before watching the preview for his documentary. That, and maybe Laird, maybe that's really rude of Laird. Maybe Laird had nothing to do with that, and that was the direct, you know, it's Rory Kennedy. And she's one of the kids. She's a Malibu person. Like, Malibu loves Laird.
Well, they're neighbors.
Yeah, I know. And Malibu thinks that Laird is like the end-all and be-all as far as a surfer goes and all that. Maybe Laird doesn't think that about himself. But if that documentary is any reflection of the way Laird actually feels about Laird, that's why I'm giving him a nod.
Yeah, you're totally entitled to it, and I would have agreed with you a short while ago.
But I love your assessment, right? Like, Laird just doing these things and not thinking about them, I give that. If Laird is not thinking about what he's doing, then I give Laird a barrel.
Yeah.
But that documentary that's coming out said to me, Laird is actively building this Laird thing. So it's not just that his hair is blonde, that he's in the sun. His hair is blonde, that he's in the, and he's in the sun. That's true. But also a layer beyond that, this is all part of Laird building his own Lairdness, which I don't like Laird building his Lairdness.
It's a good point. It remains to be seen. I'll have to wait and watch that documentary.
We'll watch the doco and we'll watch and see how Laird, you know, portrays himself. And I'm not talking about like being humble and stuff like that. I'm just talking about the giant, the shrill, you know, the preview at least was the shrillest preview I've seen in a long time. Laird changed the world.
I know.
Laird literally built the world.
Produced, executive producer on that is Paul Speaker.
Perfect.
I don't know if you noticed that in the credits.
Hell, that's awesome.
I think so to a certain degree, I think that Laird transcends Beryl. And you know, like he, because of the things that I just said, one astute Instagram commenter mentioned on my post about Jerry Lopez, you know, we decided he didn't get barreled at Kelly's Wave Ranch because why would he contort himself into this small barrel? He's Jerry.
Sure.
And one astute Instagram commenter said, Jerry Lopez doesn't get barreled. Barrels get jerried.
That's so true. Brilliant.
So true, right?
Yep.
Sums it up perfectly. And I feel the same way about Laird, where it's like Laird is just going to do whatever he wants to do in the ocean, regardless of who's paying attention. And I watched one of kind of press interview that he did for that documentary with Rory. And he said that he's actually fended off directors over the years who wanted to do documentaries on him because he's just like, dude, I've got nothing to say. I'm not particularly interesting.
Well, and he shouldn't have done this one either.
Well, so I don't know. So maybe that just makes me think that maybe there's an angle to it that
there certainly was not an angle in the preview. I know.
Well, maybe in post they edit, or maybe just the preview got edited in
a
way.
Let's go watch
that
it.
Makes it look.
Let's go watch it. Let's live podcast. Yeah. We can watch it quietly and talk about it as it's going.
Here's the other thing that I like about Laird in relation to the conversation we had about Derek, which is I love somebody who lives their life with a lot of conviction.
Sure.
And Laird lives with a conviction. Like, the dude loves the ocean and health and being fit more than I've loved anything in my life ever.
Totally.
And so a part of me just kind of wants to model my life after Laird and just be like, you're radical and you're really doing it well, and I want to do that.
I get it. You know? I get it. It's just it was the preview. The preview killed me on him.
I asked last time to tell me about Yemen, and then we ran out of time. So can you give me, I haven't read anything that you've written about Yemen on Beach Grit, but you've been doing a series of articles. Tell me what I need to know about Yemen and what we need all listeners to know about Yemen.
Oh, I mean, so I first went to Yemen. It was like the first real, I guess, surf trip that I ever did. It was, you know, after 9/11, a buddy and I, you know, I'd spent time in the Middle East before. I studied in Egypt and then, you know, I'd gone back and gotten sick. So I got to spend a lot of time in a Jordanian hospital. But I've always had a real love of the Middle East. And then after 9/11,
did you go specifically for a surf trip or did you go with an ulterior purpose?
To Yemen?
Yeah.
Yeah. For a surf trip. I mean,
that was all it was though. It wasn't like you got a report on something and then also go surfing.
No. It was like,
why'd you choose Yemen?
Because after 9/11 happened, you know, Osama bin Laden, or obviously it was the first time I think I'd heard of Osama bin Laden, or I think we all had before because of whatever he was doing in Somalia. But you know, that was the first time I guess I really looked in and saw who is this guy and saw that he came from Yemen, the hills of Yemen. And then so kind of looked at a map and looked at Yemen and wondered, had anybody surfed Yemen? Like it's this, you know, that's where Al-Qaeda was in the hills and that's awesome. But the coastline of Yemen, you know, the way it bends around, it's basically Indian Ocean. And I thought there's got to be swell there. You know, I'm no surf cartographer and, you know, don't know swell direct. I don't know anything, right?
Yeah.
But I just looked at the coastline and then, you know, a buddy and I looked and we tried to figure out if anybody had ever surfed there, called Sam George from Surfer. Nobody had ever surfed the mainland of Yemen as far as he knew, as far as anybody knew. So we thought, okay, we've got to go do it. And so, yeah, we went, spent 3 months, and it was, you know, it was awesome. And since then, I'd been back to Yemen, I think I've probably been back 5 times, you know, rode a motorcycle one end to the other, did just a bunch of stuff in Yemen. I love Yemen. And now Yemen has basically become ground zero of a proxy war between the West and Iran. Saudi Arabia is just demolishing the place. Saudi Arabia is not a great place. And honestly, flattening Yemen. There's cholera outbreak, you know, wild cholera outbreak. There's just a bunch of, you know, unnecessary pain and suffering in the country. And I've never really told the Yemen stories fully. And I was just so disgusted by kind of my, you know, it's this place that I love and has given me a ton. What could I do to help? And I couldn't think of anything to do to help. And so I thought, at least I'll just tell my stories of Yemen. And so that's how the series started.
Is the series continuing, or is it already?
Yeah,
is
no,
there a beginning, middle, and end?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I'm just spelling out that first trip, basically.
The first trip,
yeah, is, you know, from start in more detail than I've ever written about it before. And I don't know that anybody cares, or, you know, I don't know that people want to read it. But I don't care. Like, it's something that I feel I need to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, just.
Did you write about it a little bit in? Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell?
A little bit, yeah.
That's where I remember reading it.
Yeah, then. I mentioned one story, and that was the story that I wrote in there was a later trip. Okay. That was when we were riding motorcycles through.
That's right.
So, yeah, and, you know, when we first did the story, my buddy wrote the story for Surfer. I wrote a story about it for Australia Surfing Life, but they were, you know, awful. I mean, Surfer story might have been good. The one I wrote was I didn't write for, I think it must have been 2 years after I wrote that story. It could have been 2 years, probably 1 year. It was so bad. I thought, okay, if I wasn't. You know, I got it back in the mail and read it, but I guess I'm not a writer.
Which, hilarious.
Yeah.
What kind of waves did you score when you were there?
No surf ranch good, but like, yeah, phenomenal. I mean, I thought for me at the time, you know, ridiculous, you know, not like pro, you know, no, like, well, yeah, we discovered a mini pipeline or something like that. But yeah, it, like, both where it was and the fact there was waves, you know, there's like, I haven't written about this one yet, but my favorite wave there was a town called Mukulla, which is, you know, I think it's like ground zero of Al-Qaeda right now. It's always been kind of Al-Qaeda-y and, you know, separatist-y, but it's a beautiful, beautiful historic town, like midway up the coast towards Oman. We found a wave, you know, it must have been 5 kilometers outside of Mukulla city center. It was like a point break, you know, like had a fun left, and the right kind of was a bit soft, but still, like, you know, head and a half, and you're out there. So you're the first person to ever surf this wave. Like by that distance up the coast, you know, maybe some people had surfed in Aden before, but nobody had ever surfed any past that. And so, you know, you're getting these feelings of we're the first person to ever surf this wave. And the fact that it's actually a super fun wave was like, yeah.
Head awesome. High point break.
Yeah. It was like head and a half point break.
And, warm water temp.
Yeah. Warm. Warm,
trunkable.
Warm. Yeah, totally trunkable.
Man.
Yeah.
And tell me about the food and the accommodation and all that sort of stuff.
It's fantastic. Like, the whole country obviously is not geared, there's not one tourist in the country.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was little interesting, you know, not designy hotels, obviously, but cool, you know, just small hotels everywhere. The food is fantastic. It's just a lot of fish and chicken and bread. But it's one of the great things about traveling in an Islamic country is they take cleanliness so seriously. You know, you have to wash 5 times a day before you pray and stuff. So everything is really clean and feels real good. I always feel health-wise better than anywhere in the world.
Really?
Than when I'm in an Islamic country. Yeah. So it was just, yeah, just great, you know, chicken, fish, goat. Yeah. Goat wasn't great, but the chicken and fish is phenomenal.
When was the last time you were there?
I was there, I think last must have been probably 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you're on the outskirts like that, how do you feel safe?
Yeah. I mean, I always have, you know, in the past. Now, obviously, things are different in Yemen. Now it's, I mean, back then they were also equally rough. I was probably just, you know, both. A little naive, but also, yeah, I mean, it's adventure, right? It's fun. Like, you're only ever as safe as you think you are, I think. Like, and so if you think you're safe.
I mean, it depends. I don't know. I haven't been to, like, war-torn parts of the world, but sounds dangerous there.
Yeah, but it sure is beautiful and fun.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Would you go back?
Not now. I mean, between cholera and, you know, what's actually happening. I wish I could say yeah.
And but, also having a kid, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the problem. Without having a kid, I would go back in a second.
Yeah.
Just where my life, like, pretty much, you know, really rolling the dice on am I going to die or not, and have leaving a fatherless child. I can't take that risk anymore.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah. Fascinating. All right. Well, if people want to follow along with that journey, beachgrit.com.
Beachgrit.com.
How often are you posting those stories?
I was doing them like every couple of days, because that's all, once every other day, because that's all I wanted to write about, which I need to, I haven't done one since now for like 2 weeks. So I was going to do one yesterday, but the depression.
Your depression took over.
Yeah. Cloud of depression.
All right. Well, right on, dude. That's all I've got on my show notes for today. Was there anything else that you want to discuss?
That's it. I was just really getting that dang
coming off the high
wave ranch off the chest.
I know.
I'd be curious though what other people think.
Well,
quite frankly,
they'll tell us on Instagram, dude.
I'm very much looking forward to other opinions.
People have been great about engaging.
Yeah,
like when we post a spinoff topic from this show, people really go at it on there and write like very thorough. Yeah. Multiple paragraph discussions.
Because tell me I'm wrong, people. Tell me that this is not the end of days.
They will. Yeah. They will. Okay. I think most people agree with you. From everything I've seen so far, there's a lot of people who agree with you.
Let's see.
They're upset about it.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of jealousy, personally.
Yeah.
All right. So at Surf Splendor and then at Reports From Hell is where you get a hold of Chaz. I've actually, for some of these conversations that spin off, I started a blog on surfsplendorpodcast.com where, like, Dave Parmenter and I had a conversation about film. Like Hollywood film, and that happened a little bit on air, and then he and I continued talking off air, and then he sent me an email with a bunch of his film recommendations from like little known gems from the 70s, some of them out of Australia, and so I was like, can I share this email with listeners? He's like, absolutely. So a lot of these conversations spin off from the show. That is all going on to this blog now. So if you want to see Dave Parmenter's film recommendations, that's on there right now. Fun stuff like that. SurfSplendorPodcast.com, along with all the Wave Ranch footage, all that sort of stuff. First of all, this was a dry show.
It was dry.
Which is problematic,
I think. Do you think so? Let's see.
No. If we do the show in the morning, I'm hopped up on caffeine.
Sure.
If we do it in the evening, hopped up on booze.
Yeah.
Do you drink caffeine? Do you drink coffee?
I do, but I'm down to one small cup a day.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I found is whether it's booze or coffee, balance is the key. Because the end of the boozy shows get sloppy.
But yeah.
Which might be better.
Yeah, that might be the best. Okay. Maybe. Okay. I was thinking about bringing actually booze into this one.
Were you really?
Sure.
We're recording at 10 a.m. for the listeners who need... That's important.
Yeah.
But I've also found if I have two cups of coffee, also no good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the jitters...
The jitters is bad with coffee.
Yeah. So today I have one cup of coffee. I feel that's the right balance.
Yeah.
Couple. Well,
let's see. Unless it's boring. Most people come back and say, jitter out.
They'll tell us.
Okay.
All right, man. Well, until next 2 weeks from now, get barreled.
Yeah, get barreled. Someone's gotta help me dig. Someone's gotta help me dig.